so neat to look over this little community of loving souls. We are just special people. I believe that. We're just special people. Wow. At least to me. I totally spaced out when I was scheduled to speak today. That, well, I mean, that's my normal state. But I totally forgot that Thanksgiving was this upcoming week. And I had nothing about Thanksgiving in my talk whatsoever. So I've got to do something to Thanksgiving up this place a little bit.
Before you get started, your friends online want you to know that they're here. So today you have Carol Mann, Denise, Marna, and Steve Etheridge.
Oh, well, who's the first one?
Carol. Carol Marn.
Oh, Carol Marn. Okay, cool. Hi, y'all.
And we have somebody on iPad, but have no idea what their name is.
Okay. Hi, iPad. You know, maybe I should turn this around so I'm talking sort of into that. Well, anyway, who?
Joanne.
Oh, Joanne. Dinas. Hi, Joanne. Ow, that's hot. Okay, don't do that, Bill. Who's your favorite poet? Who? Rumi?
Maya Angelou.
Maya Angelou. Tennyson?
Gary Snyder.
I'll have to look that one up. Anybody else? Yes. Oh, Edna St. Vincent de Lay. She's something. Well, my favorite poet, oh, we're very fortunate that she's here. Leslie Reifert Hughes, who's speaking next week. Yay, Leslie. So, you know, in order to Thanksgiving up this talk a little bit, she sent me a couple of poems that I was not to be reading. But you know how I am. So here's this one. Get ready. It's very serious and somber and, you know, pithy Thanksgiving poem. The turkey's on the platter, all carved and nicely sliced. The vegetables are steaming. The cider's nicely spiced. The yams are baked and candied. The stuffing's in the bowls. And butter laced with honey accompanies the rolls. The family is gathered, prepared, and saying grace. A hungry expectation reflects in every face. And just as we are ready to bow our heads in thanks, a shout disturbs the silence from deep inside the ranks. He's going for the touchdown. He's going all the way. Go, 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 he shouts. And touchdown, let us pray. Oh, Lord, we're truly grateful for our Thanksgiving dinner. And Lord, while you're at it, please make my team the winner. Yay. Well, as I look around this earth, it takes looking at things with special eyes to be thankful because there's just a lot going on that I've got to be able to see through and trust that the end is already established before I can be thankful. You know, if you've been watching the midterms, everything seems to be just split right down the middle. And I've noticed for years that across the world are the votes. Have you noticed that the votes everywhere are just 50-50 and everybody's just like right on the knife edge? And it's kind of scary. It really is kind of scary. You know, this really should be okay because it would be checks and balances and diversity. And we could say it's wonderful that the world is so diverse. if it weren't for one thing, and that's judgment. Instead of looking at one another and saying, I'm grateful for the difference, it's like, I want to make you like me because I am the way things are supposed to be and you're not. And so it ends up being an ugly scene. But I really don't want to talk today about the world's judgments out there because that's not where the real damage occurs. Where the real damage occurs is what happens within the person who judges. That's where the real hurt happens. I want to read something to you from a man named Henry Carlson. Judgmentalism is a work of darkness. It's bitter, unjustly cynical, and seeks to destroy. The works of darkness turn us away from charity and grace. And the more we hold on to judgment, the further we find ourselves from our Creator. Likewise, the more we hold on to judgment, the further we cut ourselves off from other people and from the common good. In this way, it can be said, we make our own punishment for judging. I believe that too, because I'll tell you, when I came here 11 years ago, I came from a Catholic background, and I was taught the way we were supposed to be. You know, we're supposed to be this way. We're supposed to treat one another very properly, very kindly, very humbly. We're supposed to be nice to one another. We're not supposed to be gruff. We're not supposed to express our negative emotions. You know, la, 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 we're just kind of just walk around like monks. And I did that pretty well. And then I came here and you know what? People weren't acting like that in this community. We had people that were off center. And I judged them. I said this once before when she was here. Sue Ditch. Oh my God, I judged the snot out of her. I thought she was horrible. I thought she was horrible because, you know, I'd always tell Sue, I said, Sue, you're loud, aggressive, and abrasive. And she said, oh, I am, aren't I? And I couldn't imagine someone accepting that, you know, until I realized that it wasn't her issue. It was my issue. Ultimately, judgmentalism is a defense mechanism. It protects us in a number of ways. One is by putting down and judging other people, it makes us feel superior. Makes us feel, you know, like, I'm not going to say that because they're recording. But it makes us think that something doesn't stink. But you know what it does. It makes us feel like we're self-righteous. Like we are the ones who are the center of perfection. And those who aren't like us are inferior. At least that's what it did for me. And therefore, it gives us a false sense of self-worth, which is as thin as veneer. And when we walk like that, we end up being thin-skinned is the best word I can put it, because our value is in this thin veneer of perfection. And when someone manages to poke through it just a little bit, it makes us very uncomfortable. Judgmentalism is rooted ultimately in a harsh judgment that we make upon ourselves. It's a protection. It's also a projection onto other people of our own lack of self-worth. Whatever I judge upon myself, I am that mirror, and it bounces off onto someone else each and every time. So if I'm harsh on myself, who else am I going to be harsh with? Pretty much everybody. Yeah. Those who are their greatest critics are themselves invariably their worst judges. I find this reflected particularly in members of the most legalistic and fundamental Christian churches, because their doctrines can be very harsh and they can cause them to walk around thinking they're just basically worthless sinners. And so therefore, if that harsh judgment is buried deep within themselves that they are of no value, they have to be made of some value by someone else, because deep in their heart, that's not who they are. If that's what they believe, then they're going to be lashing out that judgment against other people. Just today, I got up this morning, I was looking at the news on the internet. Five people were murdered in Colorado Springs in a gay bar. Somebody walked in judging them horribly and murdered five of them and injured 20. And the people in the bar had to stop him and pin him down while the police came. And what is this? This is a judgment. See if I can remember the story right. This is I'm just kind of sputtering out stuff here. But there was an event that happened in the life of Mahatma Gandhi. He was in the middle of a fast, and he was on the top of a roof, laying there in a bed. You remember this one? Yeah. And he was getting somewhat near death, but he was praying because of the fighting between the Hindus and the Muslims. And a man climbed up the side of the building and came upon the roof and was going to kill him. And Mahatma Gandhi said, this is a long time ago, so I mean, I hope I'm getting this right. He said, "What is it that is making you so angry? What is it that's making you so filled with hate?" And the man said, and Mahatma Gandhi said something about forgiving him. And the man said, "You can never forgive me because of what I've done." And he said, what have you done? And he said, "Years ago, I murdered a Hindu child." He said, "I took him by the legs and I slammed him up against the side of a wall and killed him." And he said, "Because of this, I can never be forgiven." And Mahatma Gandhi looked at him and said, "There is one way to forgiveness." He said, "Go adopt a Hindu child." And the man thought, okay. And then he said, "And there's one other thing. You must raise him as a Hindu." And the man just panicked and went and jumped over the roof. Did I get the story right?
Yeah, pretty close. I mean, you switched Hindu and Muslim, but
hey, I don't believe in religion anyway, so whatever, you know. But yeah, it was something like that. It was the judgment that this man made against others that caused him to hate himself so much that he would jump over a roof rather than be willing to forgive himself. Being because of my background, I can talk about Christianity more clearly, because that's where my roots are. And in the history of Christianity, Jesus came from a very judgmental background. He just did. There was a lot of legalism: do this, do this, don't do that. And he came ultimately to seek to eliminate that judgmentalism. So the reason that was the case is so that judgment wouldn't harm this early church, causing them to judge one another by knowing what the rules were. You know, you don't do this and you don't do that. Well, I can look at the other person and see if they're following up with that. And if they're not, then they're wrong. You know, so one of the things that Jesus came to do was to get rid of legalism, to turn into judgment. And in the book of Acts, a lot of people don't know this. This is so powerful. There was the Council of Jerusalem. And in the Council of Jerusalem, what happened, it was Peter against Paul. And Peter was like traditionally the head of the early church. And Paul became pretty much up there, even though he wasn't originally one of the apostles. And it was those two butting heads, because Peter wanted the early church to remain legalistic. He wanted it to remain Jewish. He wanted the people who were converted to Christianity to have to be circumcised and to follow the law. Paul, on the other hand, was the one who had gone out all over into the world at that time to speak to people. And he had been acquainted with people of every background, of every religion, and he recognized their goodness. And he says, no, we're not here to make everybody be like the religion that Jesus came from. We came here to eliminate law and judgmentalism. Well, that didn't go over very well with Peter. Not at all. And so in the end, the vote happened, and speak it, blah, blah, blah.
They went to James. James actually made the decision that, you know.
Brother of Jesus, right?
Yes.
I didn't, you know, and I, out of my brains, didn't catch that part. But at least in the end, the vote went for Paul, toward Paul. And so they said, okay, no one who comes into Christianity anymore will follow the law. There will be no laws. There will be no doctrines. There will be none of that sort of thing. And they said, well, wait a minute. There's got to be at least something. You know, and they finally said, okay, there will be one thing only, and that's you don't eat meat that's been sacrificed to idols. And that was the only law there was to be in early Christianity. And they said, that's just so it doesn't shock people too much coming in from certain backgrounds. But that would be it. Because they didn't see Jesus's teachings as doctrines. They didn't see that Jesus taught us to live in a mental space of being able to judge one another. And so he made it very clear, don't judge, lest you yourself be judged. Well, what did he mean? Don't judge unless you yourself be judged. Who would be doing the judging? If I judge someone, it would be me judging myself, because it comes right back on me. So how do we here in many backgrounds, how do we end this habit of judgmentalism? Because it seems to be deeply rooted within us. Criticism, judgment, do this, don't do that. How do we get around that? It's really tough. Because for one thing, it seems to me that when I originally came here, my judgmentalism, which was intense, was rooted in a sense of, it was rooted deeply in my sense of good and bad. That if I didn't judge, I was allowing other people to go on in wrongness. That's the best way I can put it. Does that make sense? Yeah. And so part of my holiness was to make everybody else right. And who was right? Man, what a sense of self-righteousness. And it ate at me. And it was the Spiritual Light Center who helped me begin to walk around that. which is a journey. The more accepting I am of myself, the more accepting and loving I will be with other people. That's just a fact. There's no way around that. And conversely, the more I reject myself and judge myself, then the more rejecting that I'm going to be of other people. Self-acceptance is about honoring all that it means to be human. And all that it means to be human is so far beyond me and what I am. We're each one of us absolutely unique. Instead of putting myself up on a pedestal, self-acceptance is not about that. It's about realistically looking at yourself and understanding who you are and embracing who you are at the very core level while recognizing that there is still growth and change possible. This talk was, I put the title on it, Freeing Ourselves from the Burden of Judgments. And so if that's what I said we're going to do, then as promised, let's talk a little bit about ways that we can get around our judgmental nature. And I think that part of our human nature is judgmentalism. I think it's, if there really were such a thing as original sin, I think one of them would be our tendency to judge other people. It's just rooted so deeply within our core. So here's some things that we could possibly do. One, take care of your body and your health. But don't be too obsessive about it, because that can be rooted in fear. You know, let me go wash my hands 4,000 times. But, you know, take care of ourselves. Keep ourselves as clean and healthy as possible. The middle ground between basic cleanliness, I'm gonna skip that part. Yeah. Okay, next one. Make a list, maybe daily at first, of everything that you appreciate about yourself. You can ask for help if it's hard for you, but start writing those things down. What are a value about yourself? Another one, removing toxic people from our life. Now, is that judgment? If I must remove someone from my life because they are toxic to my very being, is that judgmentalism? It's self-care. Yeah, it really is. It is boundary setting. That doesn't mean that I have passed a judgment on that person in any way. It simply means that I've assessed my life and realized that the direction that I seek to go will not be possible with this individual connected to me. And so I simply say, I can't move any further with this. And I can love that person very, very much at a distance. What's that prayer? May the Lord bless and keep you far away from me. yes, indeed. Also, surrounding ourselves with positive people in our life, supportive people. Other one, reading self-help books and nurturing and being part of a nurturing supportive group, such as the Spiritual Light Center. Consciously doing one loving thing for someone else every day. That's tough because I'm such a hermit. I live in my house all by myself most of the time. How can I do something loving for someone else every day? Huh? Phone calls? What's another one? Facebook. Get on Facebook, you can really lift people up that way, and that I've sure been lifted up, but just one every single day, make you feel good about yourself. Another one, writing several letters of forgiveness to yourself for past mistakes. Why do I say several? First one doesn't usually go in, does it? No, you got to keep working at it. To work toward acceptance of your own, what you judge as less proper side, or your shadow self, or coyote self. Mine is with a lot of dark humor, a kind of ornery playfulness. But I have to realize that if I stop and judge myself for that, then maybe one of my greatest qualities is going to go out the window. Perfectionism. It's really a form of self-hatred. It's what it is. Perfectionism is self-hatred. As a Lady Gaga quote says, if you aren't casting a shadow, you're not in the light. I like that. Okay. Another one. Contemplating. I can't understand what I'm saying in this, so I'm going to skip it, okay? I don't have no clue what that one is. Okay, whatever. Another one, really important, is to avoid not just words, but concepts that are involved with should or ought. If you're shouldn't all over everybody, then basically what you're doing ultimately is trashing the self-esteem of those around you. And that is going to come back on you every single time. And another one is, I've seen people do this. They continue to should and ought people, but they'll change the word. Say, well, I don't want to use the word should, so I'll say something like, may I suggest, or might I recommend? It's the same thing as saying should. It's the same concept in your heart. So the idea is, how can I accept what another person is doing entirely without a judgment of any sort? If I come into a room and I see that they've done something and it isn't exactly what I think should have been done, is it that critical? Is it that important? Do I need to go up to them and say, no, you shouldn't do this. That should be over here. That should be done like this. Is it that important? If I see somebody about to walk into a big hole in the sidewalk, you know, I'm going to say, wait a minute, you should maybe walk over to the left. Yeah, okay, that's critical. But if it's not, let it go. It's not that big a deal. Another one is to look deeper into other people and into situations. Because jumping to conclusions about others causes us to ignore their complexity, to ignore the depth of the beauty within them. That's what I did to Sue. I just judged the snot out of her because I didn't see her complexity and I didn't see that depth of kindness down underneath it all. And sometimes I still forget. And one thing I've always noticed, if I go, she never gets upset. Never. I didn't notice that. I'm sorry. You know, that kind of gruff person is just a cream puff underneath it. But I didn't see that complexity. So part of ending my judgmentalism is to work towards seeing the depth of others. We end up believing sometimes that, like, say, if I go to the grocery store and there's somebody that's just really cranky and really mean, what I can do is I can assume that that person that's cranky and mean intends to be cranky and mean, that they calculated that, they meant it. They sat there and decided to be a mean, nasty person. Is that really the truth most of the time? No, it's what is the truth most of the time? Come on. Yeah. Exactly. But right in the middle of the battlefield, it's hard to see that, isn't it? When they're jumping on your case. If I look beneath, if I see them, the complexity that's within them, then I'm going to see often a person that's struggling with some tragic things. And seeing this helps me to build compassion. And if I build up compassion and share that compassion with them, then what is it that comes back onto me? Is self-love and self-respect each time. Once I give it to them, it comes back to me. I'm gonna skip all that too. La, la, la. Okay. I think most importantly is the best way I know of to end judgmentalism is to ground myself in mindfulness. If I'm living in constant judgmentalism, that causes me to cease being grounded in reality as it objectively is. Instead of seeing what reality is, what I'm seeing is the way I think things should be. And then reality vanishes. I'm no longer seeing what is, I'm seeing what I think should be, and therefore what I see is wrong. And I'm living in a world of wrongness, except for me, the big tower of self-righteousness. Forgot about that part. We end up getting lost in a world of our judgments, anger, paranoia. Mindfulness is about paying attention to the present moment as it is. When you start to feel the walls of judgmentalism go up, there are things you can do. If I stop and I catch myself judging, I can just say, wait a minute, what is reality at this moment? I could feel the breeze on my face. I can check into whatever the smells may be. I can stop and just say, wait a minute, I want to immerse myself in what exists. And when I do that, my judgmentalism fades. It disappears. Regularly practicing mindfulness will help you to discern without passing judgment. Just to discern. It'll help me to see what is versus what I think, what should be. I like going into the woods. And the woods doesn't care what's supposed to be. When I see a tree growing, there's all these nice little trees everywhere. And then one of the trees is just as crooked as it can be. Big old burls coming out of it. And when I see that, my first thought is, what an interesting tree. Isn't that fascinating? Look at that. It's really different. Wouldn't it be nice if I could do that with everybody else? It would make a really nice world, wouldn't it? Mindfulness allows us to distinguish the differences between people without addressing worthiness. That's the issue. If I start getting into worthiness, is it worth? Is this good? Is that good? Is this bad? Is that bad? Once I start getting into that, assessing worthiness, wait a minute, it's not my place to assess worthiness. That is not my position on this earth. If I start assessing worthiness, I know right away I am completely off track. And these are skills that take time to achieve. It's like Pam said, what did you say? It's a process. Well, life is a process, isn't it? Like meditation, it can take a lifetime to get our thoughts out of the way, get our judgments out of the way, our thinking out of the way, so that we can see the world as it is freely, unfettered by those thoughts. Simple observation isn't easy to do because I know I myself can very easily become a tower of judgment. This is the way it ought to be. This is the way it shouldn't be. Do this, do that. That's just ingrained. So to begin to see the world as it is, simple observation, is a skill that I'm still trying to learn. There's none of us who fully achieved that freedom from the bondage of judgment. I don't think any of us has fully accomplished it, but we're on a path. And I love the Spiritual Light Center because that's one thing if there were a doctrine in this place, which is there really isn't, we don't have doctrines or rules, but if there was a doctrine, I think it would be leave your judgments at the door. Put a little basket there and just drop your judgments so we can love each other exactly as we are from whatever background we are, whatever religion or lack thereof. There is no judgment. That's our goal. And like every other aspect of spirituality, it's a goal. This place has really helped me in that process. And I know I've got a long ways to go, but that's why I've just got to stick around and keep doing it. Oh, wait, Thanksgiving, right? Thanksgiving. Oh, I have to end with a Thanksgiving thought. From my favorite poet, the turkey. The turkey is a noble bird, I've often heard it said, but nobler still is when the fowl is served without its head. When all trussed up and basted with the stuffing deep inside, it is the national bird of choice, whether baked or fried. When Ben was voted down to make the turkey number one, the eagle may have made the cut, but still the turkey won. To celebrate the holidays with these noble birds, we ask for second helping and maybe even thirds.